And I would now like to introduce to you our main speaker for the evening, Mickey B. from Santa Monica.
Thank you. Hi, everybody. My name's Mickey Bush, and I'm a fully conceded alcoholic. That's fully conceded, not conceited, although you may think differently after I've finished. Can't even open this bloody thing. Don't bless it and turn it into wine. Well, there's certain dudes that do that, you know. I'm somewhat overwhelmed. I'm having a little gratitude attack, you know. I've just been hearing about gratitude and just sitting there and having a little gratitude attack. You know what I mean by gratitude attack? You know, when you get that big fat feeling of gratitude. I never brought that here with me, folks. I never came in here with any gratitude. I didn't know about gratitude when I got here. I had no idea. Gratitude? I mean, what the hell is gratitude? Who's got gratitude? What do you want to have gratitude? And yet the truth of the matter was, I had something to be grateful for ever since they christened me. I mean, think about it. My name's Mickey B. Mickey B. You know, Mickey. You know, that puts me somewhere between a mouse and a president. Not such a big gap, really, I guess, you know. Of course, I'd never say a thing like that, you know. But Mickey, I mean, I am really grateful that they never named me Harry. Can you imagine going through life with a name like Harry? Yeah. God, I don't know. But anyway, I'm really grateful to be here. I'm really grateful to be here. And I don't know where I am. I don't know where here is. I mean, I came with Randy. Randy ran me up here and treated me really nice, took me to dinner. And George, where's George? There's George up the back. Sick one's up front, George. treated me really nice and I'm feeling pretty good though I'm sick. I'm physically sick. I'm not very well. I got a fever and I'm not physically doing very well at the moment, so I didn't want to miss coming down here and fulfilling the obligation and stuff. And I was going to go to Mexico and talk tomorrow down in Rosarita, but I'm not going to go there. I'm going to go home, back to Santa Monica where I live. And that'll be it for me. Yeah. But there's a wonderful feeling in this room tonight. And there's a wonderful feeling of joy and pleasantness. I like that a lot. You know, I like to have the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, and the 12 and 12 with me. You know, my license plate is AA 12 and 12. You know, anonymity up the wazoo on, as far as I know. I like the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, this beautiful book, Alcoholics Anonymous. I'll tell you what it means, so that if you get pissed off at me or have to leave or something like that, which some people do, I don't deliberately piss people off, but, you know, sometimes they get pissed off. So if you have to leave, I'll tell you what I'm going to talk about, and then you can piss off now if you like. Look, A-L-C-O-H-O-L-I-C-S, Alcoholics. A-N-O-N-Y-M-O-U-S, Alcoholics Anonymous. A life centered on helping others lives in complete sobriety. Actions, not our names, yield maintenance of unity and service. See, and that's all there is, folks. And it's right here in this beautiful book, Alcoholics Anonymous. So that's all I'm going to be doing, and talking about that, and relaying in a general way what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. And I love doing that. I love being who I am, doing what I'm doing for the reasons I'm doing it, where I'm doing it, with the people I'm doing it. And I never used to do that. I never used to do that, you know. I just didn't, you know. I didn't. I'm a real alcoholic, a real alcoholic. I am a real alcoholic, a total alcoholic. Everything about me is alcoholic. Everything I say, do, think and feel is alcoholic, you know. It's not just a part of me alcoholic or a big part of me that ain't alcoholic. I'm all alcoholic, see. So consequently, being a real alcoholic, I have the right to be dysfunctional in as many ways as I like. You know? Don't tell me I'm limited or restricted. If there's good dysfunction out there, I want my share of it, for Christ's sake. You know? And of course, being a real alcoholic, you know, I mean, I don't just want my share, I want what? More! That's right, more! I just want more! More. I just want more of everything. No matter what it is, I just want more of it. You know? I'd even want more bloody herpes than you. You know, I just would. I just want more of everything. I don't care what it is, I just want more of it. So, like I always drank the drug alcohol. I always drank the drug alcohol. I don't remember not drinking the drug alcohol. Always drank it, but didn't only drink it. I also did mountains of drugs. Mountains of good drugs. And the bad ones. Did the bad ones too. You know. I'm a real alcoholic that also did mountains of drugs. Drugs. D-R-U-G-S. Devil's revenge upon God's subjects. See? And I did mountains of drugs. And, I see folk in here. I see folk that I know from Narcotics Anonymous and Cocaine Anonymous and other anonymous programs here tonight. And, I talk about that. And I don't mean to offend a real alcoholic that perhaps didn't do drugs. You know, I know there are a few. I don't meet them, but I'd guess they're here, you know. I mean, you know, if you're an alcoholic that just and only drank alcohol, if you're an alcoholic that didn't do any drugs, you know, if you're an alcoholic that just and only drank alcohol, a specialist, I'm really glad you're here, right? You know, I'm really glad you're here. Right? But I ain't no specialist. I'm a chemical gourmet, mate. You know, I told my sponsor, I said, I'm a chemical connoisseur, man. He said, no, Mick, you're a chemical kind of sewer is what you are. And I did mountains of drugs. And I talk about it because they say things like, you know, we don't want to hear a lot of other talk, singleness of purpose. And I maintain Alcoholics Anonymous is singleness of purpose, perhaps more than I should. But, I talk about drugs in Alcoholics Anonymous. They said in the beginning, we shouldn't talk about drugs and other things in Alcoholics Anonymous because a real alcoholic may come to Alcoholics Anonymous and he may hear a lot of talk that he doesn't understand and he may not come back. Well, those folks have got all the bloody mileage they're going to get out of that. I ain't giving them no more mileage on that one. So you can go screw yourself. You know, if an alcoholic comes to Alcoholics Anonymous, in my experience, and don't come back because of something he heard in Alcoholics Anonymous, well, then he just ain't bloody ready for Alcoholics Anonymous. So I ain't giving no more mileage to that, you see. So, you know, and, you know, we got so many of our young troops today coming through the ranks, real alcoholics coming up through the ranks. that are already addicted long before they even get to us, and they can go out there and they can cop on any street corner anything that they want long before they're even legal age to buy booze. And they come into our meetings and places like that, and some of them get shunned and some of them get put off and ostracized. And I have a little grievance against that. If you don't know how to talk to somebody who also does drugs, don't tell them to get out or go somewhere else, or don't talk about that. Direct them to somebody like me if you've got to do anything, or if you don't want to. You know, our young troops coming through the ranks, real alcoholics, you know, what are we going to tell them, young troops? You know, get out, go somewhere else, don't bring it in here. They ain't going to understand that. Half of them don't know where the bloody arse hangs anyway. You know, so I don't tell them that. I say, come in, be, you know, inclusive, not exclusive. You know, and let them come here and learn, like we talk about. We learned we had to fully concede to our innermost self that we were alcoholic. This is the first step in recovery. It's the first step in recovery, but it's not the first of the 12 steps. See, there's two first steps in Alcoholics Anonymous. There's the first step in recovery where we learn to fully concede to our innermost self that we're alcoholic. And then there's the first of the 12 steps, which is where we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives have become unmanageable. Two totally different steps, though often confused, you see. So I had to learn about this stuff. And when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I didn't hear what I'm talking about to you right now. I got to Alcoholics Anonymous on January the 15th, 1983. Broke, busted, disgusted, and not to be trusted. You know, helpless, hopeless, and powerless. I never knew any of this. I never knew I was alcoholic. I never knew nothing about Alcoholics Anonymous. I never knew nothing about 12-step program. I never knew nothing about nothing. I never came in here with the only requirement for membership. I never came in here with the only requirement for membership. You know, I learned about it here. You know, when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was so sick. I was so sick that I didn't know I was sick. Do you know how sick that is? That's really sick, you know. I was so sick I didn't know I was sick. And then even after I came here, I came to meetings and then I would scan the meeting and I would think, well, I ain't as sick as him. Do you know how sick that is? Do you know how sick it is to be in a meeting full of alkies thinking you ain't as sick as the next guy? That's really sick, you know. So if you're in here tonight wondering whether you is or whether you isn't a real alky or not, I want you to know that I can relate to being as sick as you don't think you are. Really sick. And I never knew. I never knew. I never had a clue, folks. I never knew. I don't know whether anybody had ever told me. I'd been a lot of places. I'd been, you know, all my life I'd lived outside the law. I'd been incarcerated in all kinds of institutions. I'd been brutalized and chained down in padded cells. I'd been shot up with tranks. I'd been, you know, locked away in all kinds of institutions. Man, I've been in institutions that cuckoos wouldn't bloody fly over, man. But you know what? They never got through to me. They didn't get through to me what was wrong with me. They knew how to bash me up, but they didn't know how to get through to me. But on January the 15th, 1983, when I came to my first ever meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, you guys got through to me what was wrong with me. I was an alcoholic and never knew it. But I never heard what I just said to you. I never heard that being an alcoholic had to include all other mind, mood, altering chemicals that affected from the neck up. I never heard that. So I carried on doing it. I came here and I never drank. Alcohol, alcoholics, alcoholics, alcoholics and honest, don't drink, so I didn't drink. But I carried on doing all the other shit. Because I do lots of other shit. I smoke a little pot. Anybody here smoke a little pot? Yeah. Anybody smoke a lot? Yeah, no shit. I ain't got a problem with pot. You know, pot only does two things to me. It makes me horny. It makes me hungry. Nothing wrong with that. Except some mornings you wake up with a sore arm and a bed full of pizza crust. But apart from that, you know, very sick. You're very sick, you know. very sick. I do speed crystal crack. Anybody here do a little speed crystal crack? Yeah. Anybody do a lot? Yeah, no shit. Did it make your dick disappear too? You ain't going to read that in no Betty Ford manual. Fire up some crystal, your dick will disappear. They don't tell you that, we know that shit. So I carried on doing it, and 4 months after I get to Alcoholics Anonymous and stunk drink, I'm nearly dead on my feet, dying, suicidal and homicidal, without what the book called a sufficient substitute. And I'm already, and I'm doing, and it wasn't until the founder of another 12-step program, Cocaine Anonymous, who was my friend, pulled me aside and said that I had to quit everything. And I was shocked. I mean, and that's why I celebrate my clean and sober birthday. I just celebrated May 8th, 1983, just a little over 25 years ago. And, it's more exhilarating and more exciting to be among you today than it's ever been, you know. The very first thing I heard when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, before I actually got in the door of Alcoholics Anonymous, now I told you, I don't know whether anybody had told me that I shouldn't have been doing the drugs or not, because they may have told me, but, you know, all my life I've had a hearing problem. I don't hear shit right. I mean, it never happened just because I got here. Years before I got here, when I was just a little kid, they'd say, "What's wrong with that kid? There's something wrong with that kid. He don't hear shit right. What the hell's wrong with that kid? It's goddamn weird. Any other weirdos here tonight?" Yeah. And the rest of you lying mothers, I know weirdos. I mean, all my life people say, "What is wrong with you? The hell's wrong with you? For Christ's sake, what's wrong with you?" And they would ask me what's wrong with me as if I knew. "What is wrong with you?" "Oh, actually, I've got a twofold disease. It's an obsession of the mind, allergy of the body. Can't control the drinking." "I don't know what's wrong with me. What's wrong with you? Why do you drink like you do? Why don't you drink like I do?" "Because I don't know. I don't know why I do what I do. I don't know why I do what I do. I just do it. I've always done it. I'm from Northwest London." You probably picked up on that, right? This is the way I talk, folks. Alcohol didn't do this to me, you know what I mean? I can't claim that as a, you know. Anyway, I come from Northwest London, Irish family, and everywhere I went, everybody drank. I didn't know anybody who didn't drink. We never had a reason to drink. We never had a reason not to drink. We just drank. Everybody drank. I never heard anybody say you shouldn't be doing that. I never heard anybody say why we did it. Everybody just did it. We drank if the team won. We drank if the team lost. If it was a tie, we drank till there was a result. We just drank. I don't know why we drank. We just drank. Everybody drank. I come in here, you folk all know why you're doing it. I heard folk talking about it. I read in the beautiful book, Alcoholics Anonymous, Doctor's Opinion. Alcoholics drink primarily because they like the effect produced by alcohol. I thought, oh, all right. Okay. Ain't got a problem with that. I never thought about it. I heard folk talking about, well, I was drinking because I couldn't stand the pain, and I was drinking because I, you know, was hiding behind who I was, and I was drinking because I had all these issues, like our first speaker. Pass the tissues, I got issues, you know. I thought, at what stage of the game do you discover that? I can't imagine that. I cannot imagine going into any pub I ever drank at and saying to the bartender, "Oh, bartender, hit me with a triple shot of your best booze. Because I can't stand who I am and I want to cover up the pain tonight." Never happened. Never happened. Oh, Mr. Dealer Man, give me an extra rock of crack cocaine, because I really feel inadequate. Never happened. Never happened. I have no idea why I do what I do. I just do it. And I've always done it, and I keep doing it. And you know, I hear folks talking about how they wouldn't swap their worst day sober for their best day drinking. I think, well, screw you. You know? I mean, I had years of great fun. It was great drinking and drugging. And we went round the planet a couple of times drinking and drugging. It was great, you know. I mean, it was just phenomenal. We just had a great time. And you know, then, you know, it wasn't so great, but it was pretty good. You know, and then it wasn't great at all, and it was not so good. And then it wasn't so good, and it got bad. And then it wasn't really bad, but it got quite bad. And then it got bad, and then it, like, got bad, but not as bad as it could have got. And then it really did get bad, and then it got really bad, and then it got January 15th, 1983, you know. You know, downward spiralling, you know, and... you know, and I don't know, I'm a blackout drinker. Any other blackout drinkers here? I never even knew what a blackout was. I've been having blackouts all my life, never even knew what they was. In that first meeting, guy told me he was in a blackout. I said, no, I wasn't. Don't know what it is, but denied it anyway, just in case. Because, you know, I deny everything. I didn't know this was a disease of denial. D-E-N-I-A-L. Don't even notice I am lying. He said, yeah, we call that a blackout. I said, no, I was awake, I was doing shit. He said, I said, blackout, idiot, not pass out. Because I didn't know you did shit in a blackout that you didn't remember. Like travel. I came out of a blackout once walking down the street in Spain. I went out drinking in London. You know something's happened when you come out of a blackout and there's sunshine and palm trees. Ain't no sunshine and palm trees in London. And I've crossed the continent and I've gone through customs and I've arrived in Spain, walking down the street in Spain with an Eskimo chick. Don't we find them? We don't all find them, us Alkies, don't we? I don't know where she came from. So, there you go. You know. So I don't know what I'm doing and how I'm doing it. And I arrive in Alcoholics Anonymous on January the 15th, 1983. And I know for a fact that God is now doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. I accept that and I learnt that here. And what time do I go up to, by the way? 8:55? Well, that's not very long. You know, and I didn't know I was powerless over alcohol. I didn't know what powerless was. It took me a long time to learn. Powerless over alcohol. I admitted we were powerless over alcohol. Our lives had become unmanageable. I didn't know what that was. How would I know? I couldn't work it out for myself. But, you know, I learned it here. I learned it here. And I kept coming back. And I learned that being powerless over alcohol wasn't what I did because I was powerless. You know, what I did because I was powerless wasn't what powerless over alcohol was. And I hear folk talking about that, and they don't understand what powerless over alcohol is. They think, believe, and say they do, but they actually don't. See, powerless over alcohol is not what I do because I'm powerless. Powerless over alcohol is the absence of power. Powerless equals no power. In the beautiful book, and we read it here tonight, it says, there's one who has all power, that one is God, may you find him now. Well, powerless over alcohol, powerless equals no power, God equals power, therefore powerless equals godless. When I get here, I have no God in my life as far as alcohol is concerned. Now, I don't know this, I was raised in a religion. You know, I know all about God, Jesus, Buddha, Allah, Muhammad, or anything else, or any other noun that you want to call it. But, you know, I never had it in my life when I got here. Why? Because I never knew why. The disease of alcoholism, years before I got here, had gotten me to abandon God and spirituality, so that along the path of life, sometimes quickly and sometimes slowly, the disease became all-powerful in my life, dictating and dominating everything I say, do, think and feel. And I never knew that. I never knew that I'd abandoned God. How would I know? I didn't know. This disease that became all-powerful in my life, years before I get here, years before the onset of alcoholism, untreated alcoholism, gets me to abandon God and spirituality. Now, only as far as alcohol is concerned, not as far as the rest of my life is concerned. I mean, God must be there because I'm here, so he must be there. Those two nuns and two priests that I work with, they dedicated their lives to the service of God and mankind. Couldn't stay sober because as far as alcohol was concerned, they'd abandoned God and had no God in their life. And the disease was all-powerful, dictating and dominating everything they say, do, think and feel. And you know what? It's so important that we understand what hitting bottom's all about. Because it's not mentioned in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Hitting bottom ain't mentioned in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. But in the beautiful 12 and 12, this book, Bill, more was revealed to Bill as well. Because although he never mentioned it in the program, in the 12 and 12, in step 1, he says, why all this insistence that every alcoholic must hit bottom first? Now that's some ballsy crap to say to a bunch of drunks, isn't it? We insist that you hit bottom first. Well, up yours. You know? We don't like authoritative figures telling us what to do. But it's so important because hitting bottom, most people don't understand what that is either, like powerless. They think, believe and say they do, but they actually don't. Even in our meetings, we say everybody's bottom's different. Better not be different. There's no unity in being different. But they don't understand what hitting bottom is, so they say this jive-ass, lip-flapping, party-line bullshit that we hear in AA meetings, you know. But hitting bottom's so important because it's the process that brings us back to the power that we've abandoned to ask for help. See? Hit bottom, HITBOTTOM. Hurting inside, totally burnt out, turn to our master. See? Hitting bottom is that stage which is the same for all of us, not different, where in some capacity or other, and I recognise when I learnt about it that I did this on January the 15th, 1983, and our first speaker talked about it too, where in some form of desperation and despair, helpless, hopeless and powerless, riddled with pain, I can remember going, help me, what is wrong with me? What am I going to do? What am I going to do? And asked for help. ASK, Ask Saving Kit. Help, HELP, His Ever-Loving Presence. See, that's the hitting bottom part. Not the outside circumstances and conditions of our life that we think is the bottom. People think that the outside circumstances and conditions of our life is the bottom, but it's not. Hitting bottom's an inside job, not an outside circumstance. But when I ask folk about their bottom, they tell me how desperate they got and how much they'd lost and where they ended up, detox of disease, you know, kids gone, family gone, living in an abandoned car, you know, destitute in jail. That's not what hitting bottom is. You'd be amazed at what I get told when I, because I always ask. You see, Bill says in this book, you know, why all this insistence that every alcoholic must hit bottom first? But you know what I don't hear in meetings? I don't hear sponsors say, I insist that my sponsees go through the process of hitting bottom first. And I don't hear sponsees say their sponsor insisted that they went through the process of hitting bottom first. Bill says it in the book. And so consequently, a lot of people are confused and never really understand the question of hitting bottom. They think that the outside circumstances and conditions of their life is the bottom. And what's dangerous about that is that when those outside circumstances and conditions get better and improve, we falsely believe we've got better and improve and drink again. See, I asked a couple of people here just here. I said to this little chickadee, what was your bottom, love? Tell me about your bottom. Bad minds, Rand. They got bad minds. Oh, she said, that's easy. She said, I was feet to the curb, hustling the Broadway, prostituting myself, trying to earn a dollar. I said, that wasn't your bottom, love. She said, well, I think it was. I said, I don't care what you think. I said to the dude, what was your bottom, pal? Oh, he said, that's easy. He said, I was locked up in a penitentiary, married to Bubba. I said, that wasn't your bottom. He said, it felt like it was. You got bad minds you got. So some of these things, see, I didn't know that this disease made me do what I already didn't want to do. And I couldn't not do it just because I didn't want to. This disease that had gotten me to abandon God all that year, those years ago, you know, so that it could become the power in my life, dictating and dominating everything I say, do, think and feel. See, I didn't know that. And I didn't know that I couldn't not do it because I didn't want to. Because this disease that was all powerful in my life made me do it even though I didn't want to do it. When I absolutely didn't want to do it, when every fibre of my body was against doing it, when every desire I had in the world was to not do it, I did it anyway. Anybody else do that? Yeah, no shit. So I couldn't not do it just because I didn't want to, because I had a disease that made me do it even though I didn't want to, and the disease was more powerful than my desire to quit. So I had to not want to do it and then do these steps in this work so that I don't do what I already don't want to do. And if I ain't doing these steps in this work, or I ain't done these steps in this work, I will do what I don't want to do, because the disease I got that I'm powerless over will make me do what I don't want to do. You think I knew that shit when I got here? I never had a clue. Never knew nothing. Never knew nothing about nothing. You know? So, and I had to quit all mind mood altering chemicals, and you know, I mean, I never even heard the term drug of choice till I got here. Drug of choice? I mean, what's that? Drug of choice? My drug of choice, if I've got one, is yours. Whatever you got is my drug of choice, and anything you got is my favourite. And that's usually followed by, is it good and will you front me some? And I just do, and so consequently, today, I'm an alcoholic ander. I am an alcoholic ander. I'm an alcoholic ander everything. I know I hear people in alcoholics saying, well, when I was an alcoholic and or anything, I couldn't have your beautiful program because it separated. Screw that. I'm an alcoholic and everything. I'm an alcoholic and a dad. I'm an alcoholic and a pervert. I'm an alcoholic and a drug addict. I'm an alcoholic and everything. You see? And whatever there's a 12-step program attached to, I got, you know, if there's 12 steps attached to it, I'm a contender for it, for Christ's sake. Don't matter what it is. AA, NACA, ACA, Overeaters, Little Peters, it don't matter what it is, you know. If there's 12 steps, I'm a contender, and that's all there is to it, you know. I suppose really I better back up and be rigorously honest, because I've got to tell you, because some of you know me, I did actually go to a Little Peter meeting, but they wouldn't let me in, said I didn't qualify. They let Randy in. Randy was on. You're a rotten lot laughing at little Randy. Fancy laughing at a little dude like that. You know. You know, if you're wondering about what goes on, I'm actually grieving today as well. I don't know, for those who knew, a friend of ours, Scott Redman, he died yesterday, and he was a friend, and I grieve his loss, and he was a wonderful speaker. Get his CDs if you get one. And he died of liver cancer. He was a wonderful member. And we have a lot of things go on in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, at 10 years of sobriety, I was in the fetal position on the floor eating the carpet in so much pain I couldn't stand it. Why? Relationships. Anybody like the R word? I wrote a word for relationships. R-E-L-A-T-I-O-N-S-H-I-P. Relationship. Really exciting love affair turns into outrageous nightmare. Sobriety hangs in peril. Yeah. Crippled. 10 years of sobriety. So, you know, what we have here, what we got in Alcoholics Anonymous is a way of living where no matter what happens, we won't have to drink and drug over it. That's what we got here. No matter what happens, because it's going to happen. You ask anybody, the fan's going to get hit, you know. And you know, we got to stick together because those folk out there don't understand us. That's why we come here, to do together what we couldn't do apart. I got three sisters and a brother. They're not alcoholic. My three sisters and a brother ain't alcoholic. I'm alcoholic. Same blood, same family, same environment, same genes. Goddamn genes that nobody knows what they're talking about. You know, they're not alcoholic. I'm alcoholic, you know. They don't understand why I drink. I don't understand why they don't. I ask them, why don't you drink? They say, I don't like it. I say, what don't you like about it? They say, I don't like the way it makes me feel. I say, what? How's it make you feel? They say, well, if I have one too many, I feel sick. I say, you got to drink past that. Who stops at sick? I don't know if anybody stops at sick. Oh, I puke, but... Oh, good, that's made room for some more. You know, yeah. They don't... My own mum just passed this year. You know, I used to go home every year to see my mum in London, England, and the first thing I do when I get round to her house, I knock her up and I tell her, Mum, I'm 25 years sober. She says, so is the cat. She don't give me no pat on the back for not doing something I shouldn't have done anyway. She says, I'm busy, I'm going to bingo, for Christ's sake. Yeah. But we do, don't we? We come together to do together what we couldn't do apart, because that's what alcoholics do. That's our gift to each other. We have a gift where we can relate where other people can't. And so I do keep coming back. The first words I heard was, keep coming back, keep coming back. That's what I heard. I thought they said, keep coming on my back. I went, what? They said, keep coming back. And I did, and I have, and I am, and I'm going to, and I will do it, you know. I love being an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Incidentally, my phone numbers, I got two phone numbers, 818 area code, are you clean? 818, are you sober? 818, are you, like Toys R Us, are you, S-O-B-E-R, are you sober? And 818, are you clean? C-L-E-A-N, completely leaving every addiction now. 818, not 800, you cheap bastard. 818. 818, you know. And I give that number because that's what I had when I got home from that very first meeting. I had two numbers in my hand and I called one. I've been an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous ever since day one. You know, and I'm going to carry on doing that. You guys taught me that. I didn't bring that in here with me, folks. You know, I had no idea. All I brought in here was a lot of hurt and hate. Hurt and hate, that's what I brought in here. I hurt and I hate everything. I hated women, couldn't stand women. I hated homos and queers and anybody different. I hated black people, totally racist and prejudiced. I was from London, England, living in Los Angeles, and I hated foreigners. You know, I couldn't stand me. I hated me and I couldn't stand you. Get away from me. Don't come near me. And with all that turmoil and torment going on, the alcohol is not taking away now. I still had to try and present to you a picture of somebody you would like. Because when your higher power is what people think of you, if you don't like me, I'm screwed. You know? That's what I brought to Alcoholics Anonymous. In a general way, the book talks about. I just did a European convention. I've been seven continents carrying this message, you know, and I just did a European convention, and like as is customary, people line up to thank you, and they were all lining me up, giving me some juice, and there was this little lady come barreling up the front, clutching her beautiful book, Alcoholics Anonymous, like this. Little black lady. Little black gay lady. Little black fat gay lady. Little fat black gay lady from Africa. And she come and stood here, and I went, what do you want? She went, you don't still hate folk, do you? I went, what? How long are you sober, love? She said, 31 days. She was on fire. She said, I wanted you to sign my book. I went, wow, give me that book. And I took her book and I wrote in her book, lots and lots and lots of love. You're a winner. And I gave her a book and she clutched it close and she went waddling off. Back to Africa or wherever she came from. But how does that happen? How does a guy like me come out of nut wards for the criminally insane? You know? You know, I was sitting in the speaker's chair, the floor of the House of Representatives. Little dignitary thing that they did, flew the flag, sent it to my mum in England. And I was sitting in the speaker's floor, looking at his chairs, looking out over the floor, lots of people. And it seemed so weird to me. Like, I come out and nut wards for the criminally insane, chained down like animals. And I'm sitting in the speaker's chair on the floor of the House of Representatives, the most powerful nation in the world. And it just struck me as funny. And I'm weird, so I went into a laughing fit. And I laughed so hard, I slipped off the chair. And there was congressmen round me and shit, and they picked me up and they said, mate, what's the matter, what's the matter? I said, you'll never understand. They said, what's up? I said, well, like, how does a guy like me, I'm crazy, I'm nuts, how does a guy like me get to sit in the speaker's chair of the floor of the House of Representatives when they're nuts? And they looked at me weirdly. He said, it happens every day. You know, I don't mean to offend anybody by using shit and stuff like that, but I sometimes do. Even my mum used to let me get away with a couple of shits here and there because I told her it was a message carrier. She said, what do you mean? She said, I don't like cussing. I said, well, shit is a message carrier. She said, what does that mean? I said, well, I use the word shit because S-H-I-T is simply how I think. Oh, all right, she said. Well, some of you think I'm full of shit, so I wrote a word for you, too. Crap. C-R-A-P. Carrying resentments against people. You know, I'm glad I got to wrap this up, but I know I've come here to carry the message to you, but for me. So I'm absolutely thrilled to be a small part of a great whole. And I love that. I love being a small part of a great whole. It's very precious. Me and Randy were talking at dinner tonight about it. You know I get a lot of juice. Some of you have given me far more juice than I deserve. I just, at my old home group in San Fernando Valley, just this week, I haven't been to my old home group for a long while, and there's a couple of celebrity actresses there. One of them just won the Oscar, and, you know, I've known them a long time. And I came out of the old home group, and they were outside, and they said, oh, hi, Mick, I haven't seen you in a while. I said, no, I live in Santa Monica now, I don't get over here very often. And one of them said, Mick, she said, I didn't realise what a celebrity you'd become in Alcoholics Anonymous. I said, what? She said, you're like this guru type guy that goes around speaking everywhere. She said, everybody knows and talks about you. And she said, I was just in New York making a picture. And she said, I went to two meetings in New York. And in both the meetings, they quoted you and mentioned you by name. She said, you're like this 12-step celebrity. I said, yeah, bloody big deal, a celebrity in an anonymous program. I said, no, you're a celebrity, I'm just a small part of a great whole. And I love that, folks, and I love that, and so are you. And you tell me by your laughter that you're relating, and you give me the message back. Because they say, you know, if you're laughing, you're relating. And if you're relating to a sick bastard like me, there ain't no doubt about you. I don't get through to no well people. Well, people don't laugh at my shit. You laugh with me. And for that, I'm ever grateful. God bless. All right.